All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Again, appreciate y'all listening, and it's been a fast-paced day today. Tirza Duran joining us now. And Tirza, welcome. You are American Consumer Institute. There's a report that has come out on the state of inflation, which I talk about almost daily, but give us an update on what that report said, if you would, please.
Yes, the American Consumer Institute recently released a report. It's titled The Recent Causes of Inflation and Adverse Consequences for Consumers. And what we did is we looked at a couple of the multiple factors that can contribute to inflation.
Okay.
We specifically focused on three. We focused on how the stimulus increased demand and really pulled the prices up. We also looked at how regulations can increase costs to consumers. And then last but certainly not least, we focused on how energy can really drive prices up the entire supply chain. And all of these factors really combined to contribute to inflation growing faster than wages, which really just eats away at the purchasing power of the American consumer.
Oh, it sure does. And again, appreciate what you guys are doing. These are things that we talk about on a routine basis, not taking any credit because I don't think I had any kind of crystal ball. I'm just kind of a common sense guy that you could look at what was happening all the way back from the beginning of, you know, COVID and some of the stimulus things we were doing, the shutting down of industries and so on. I mean, if you looked at all of that, to me, Tirza, it was just a sign that buckle up. You're going to see inflation like we haven't seen in quite a long time. And the reality is we're here. It happened.
Yeah, I don't think it didn't really take a crystal ball to tell you that about $6 trillion in inflation or in stimulus going to drive inflation.
And really, Tirza, it was probably more like 10.
Yeah, when you add everything together.
Right, when you add it all up. I mean, you watched the deficit even go from the low $20 trillion range to now over $30 trillion. So, yeah, I don't think the 10 was that far off.
Yeah, when you look at inflation, there's multiple causes. Obviously, the report did talk about stimulus. We also talked a lot about energy, which I think is what a lot of Americans
agree. Big one.
Right
Big one. Huge.
Yeah,
I mean, as you know, I mean, it's huge. It's one of the things that really the economists, quote unquote, I don't think take into consideration because I've said this numerous times. They all live on Wall Street. We all live on Main Street. And the difference in inflation from Wall Street to Main Street in this case right now is about 7 points.
Yeah, when you look at the overall cost of energy prices, they have increased over 40% as of June.
That's right.
From the year prior. And when you look at the energy and transportation costs, this is really hurting the low-income consumer who has less disposable income to begin with. And when you break it down by income group, the increased cost in energy and transportation amount to almost 80% of expenses for households under $15,000. And yes, that's a lower threshold, but it's a massive increase for the people who really can afford it the least.
Well, the other thing that I've noticed, too, and I've had folks even reporting some of this back. I mean, I do lots of interviews during the week, still a business owner myself, so I see that end of it as well, and you know, have employees and so on. But the other thing that I've noticed too, Tirza, is, and I had somebody that I was texting this morning that runs a business that is, you know, it's in the entertainment world, and it's not high entertainment. In other words, this is a business where typically there's a lot of cash that may come and go depending upon the time of the year and what's happening and so on. And what I heard this morning was the cash, you know, as far as buying things, has pretty much dried up. People are now using credit cards to do things that they typically would have paid cash for before. What that tells me is they don't have the cash. They're now relying on credit to even do basic entertainment things.
Well, when we talk about the stimulus influence, what it really did is it just artificially created this demand for prices. And so it's not surprising that stimulus has obviously run its course, and it's not there to artificially push up demand anymore.
Yep.
But across all businesses and everything, one of the things I think is really interesting, and I mentioned it earlier, is the energy, which a lot of people think of that with like their gas and their electric bills, but what they don't realize is that it's really a foundational input for almost everything you purchase.
Everything. That's right.
It really drives up
the
cost throughout the entire supply chain.
Yeah, I can't think, you know, Tirza, I mean, again, being somebody that's, you know, I've been in business since I was 22 years of age, and you know, you look at the overall impact that just fuel alone, diesel fuel, gasoline has on industry, and I honestly, Tirza, you know, maybe maybe education, and that might be a stretch on saying that it's not affected by energy prices because it still is in the form of, you know, natural gas, electricity, and all of that. But there really isn't too many things that, diesel fuel and gasoline don't touch when it comes to getting goods to market. The reality is almost every single thing we all touch involves that.
Yes, that's exactly true. And it's one of those things that people don't realize it till it's too late. And unfortunately, we can see a lot of industries that can really turn on a dime and pivot very quickly. But when we're talking about energy production, the American Petroleum Institute reported that the plans for drilling and production are made at least a year in advance. Mm-hmm. And sometimes an average of 5.5 years from discovery to production. So we're talking about these industries that really need kind of a long runway in order to get running, and so they can't pivot and adjust to demands just on a dime. And unfortunately, what we've seen is some pretty hostile policies for a lot of the natural gas industries. And the natural gas industries right now are supplying 60% of our energy production. So they're a really essential industry, and unfortunately, they were overlooked until it was too late.
No, I agree. And then we, on top of that, which I'm sure you guys will have another report. Based upon whether or not this inflation reduction bill actually passes, it's hard to say what's going to happen in the House. I mean, it passed the Senate, it goes back to the House now. They may vote on it later this week, as long as they don't make too many adjustments to it. My prediction is it will pass. If they make a bunch of adjustments, then it may end up going back to the Senate and it may not pass. I guess we'll see how things go. But Tears, you guys know this. You're an economist. You've got a full education in this that I don't have. But I can tell you, you cannot add $600 billion in spending, call it a tax reduction, which it will not be, and then somehow think this is going to somehow reduce inflation. It's not going to happen.
Yes, it's one of the running jokes here in D.C. that the titles of the bills are almost always opposite of what they're going to do.
Yep.
And so the Inflation Reduction Act is it's a politically intelligent move because people are very concerned about inflation at the moment. But you're right, when you're adding all this money into the economy, obviously we didn't learn from the stimulus and the impact on inflation. But additionally, it includes over $300 billion for energy and climate spending. And when we're talking about energy being one of the driving factors for inflation, you're talking about energy and climate spending. But really what that is it subsidies generally going towards renewable energy. And while renewable energy is great, it provides about 20% of our energy demand, it's not at the point where it can completely replace fossil fuels. And right now, we're really villainizing a fossil fuel industry without considering how we're going to replace it, and we don't really have any other viable alternatives right now.
No, it's funny. I was at a car show yesterday. I don't typically get to go to ones because I have my own radio show I do on Saturdays along the car end of it, and typically when I'm at an event, because we've got the show there, I don't have time to walk around. So yesterday I was actually able on a Sunday to go to an actual car show near my house, so I did. And at this particular car show, there were numerous EVs on display, which everybody knows I own one. I own one just so I can see what it's like and talk intelligently about that whole end of things, which I know far more about it than most journalists do because I actually own one, Tears. But it was funny. There was an actual sign there, and yesterday I wasn't in the mood to really get into a big, long dissertation, but there was one Nissan Leaf there with a big sign in front of it that said something to the effect of, "We've got to end all fossil fuel use now." And it was in these big bold letters. And I almost stopped and said, "Okay, do you realize that if we stop that, this car here you're driving, even though you think it's really environmentally friendly, wouldn't exist without oil in the first place?"
Exactly. And even electricity, I'm not, maybe they have a wind farm that they're using. But we still could.
In Colorado, Tears, we're not. We use a very, very little bit of wind and solar energy in this state. Most of ours is coal and natural gas.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, yes, electric vehicles maybe are more environmentally friendly or have less CO2 emissions than other types of vehicles, but we're still not talking about ending all fossil fuels at this moment. It's just something that's not feasible. No. It's a talking point. Some people think it's popular, you can get some people behind it, but it's just a logistical issue at this moment when we're still relying on fossil fuels for the vast majority of our energy. We can't talk about switching to renewables, which right now only provide about 20% of our energy, and they're so fairly unreliable because we have yet to really fully address the storage issue of what do you do if it's not sunny.
On top of that, and here's a report I've honestly, I don't, if it exists, I would love to know, and maybe you guys could research this in, you know, in, inside of the Institute, the American Consumer Institute itself, because I would love to know this answer, because I have searched high and low. I cannot find it. There are some bits and pieces out there. You know, Sierra Club did kind of a thing on this a while back, but it's very incomplete. What I mean by this is, Tirza, I want to know what it actually takes in oil production, how many barrels of oil, to build an EV, not on the factory floor itself, but totally what it takes to mine the, you know, the rare earth metals, to get the batteries put together, what it takes to get that shipped back over here to the U.S. to assemble that vehicle. I want to know every single supplier in the supply chain and what, you know, how much oil is used in every one of those industries to build every single component, from wiring harnesses to wheels to brakes to tires to on down the line we go. I have yet to see a study. I'm guessing somebody's done it, but they've never released it to the public, because my guess is that while they may tout that it's more CO2 friendly at the end of the day, it is not, because I'm guessing they're eating up far more CO2, or producing far more CO2 when it's all said and done, than the average ICE vehicle is. But yet I can't find that report, because I don't think anybody wants to release it.
I'm not sure about those exact numbers. I do, it's in the same area. I do recall a report that discussed electric vehicles. I believe this one was specifically Tesla's, that they have to be driven about 100,000 miles, maybe 120,000 miles before they become actually carbon neutral. And again, when we're talking about driving vehicles, that's a fairly large amount of miles put on a vehicle before it actually that it costs to produce.
And the thing about that particular end of it, again, that I've never seen is I've never seen the data that goes into that. In other words, are they just talking the vehicle, the battery, what happens on the actual factory floor, or are they including all of the other things I just made note of a moment ago? Because I've never seen a report that throws everything into it. I've only ever seen what happens on the factory floor, which, by the way, is a fraction of it.
Exactly. When you're talking about the transportation, when you're talking about everything that really goes in, the number definitely gets a lot higher, which is why I think it's, especially at a time when we're having really high energy inflation, it's really important to keep that in perspective. And yes, anybody's against protecting the environment, but we're really talking about a logistical issue here. And talking about renewable energy is not at the place where we can completely shift our demand. That's not there. I believe there is a report from Solar Futures, and their best projections were that solar energy could provide about 40% of electricity by 2035. And again, that's just electricity, not all of energy demands, and that's still 10 years away.
Wow.
And even that best estimate was based on the assumption that the government would pour a lot of subsidy support behind it. So again, you're really shielding the producer.
Agree.
From the full cost of what that technology actually is.
Good information. I appreciate it very much. Folks, you can find this article, by the way, we'll link it in our notes. It'll be on our show notes later this evening as well. Tirza, thank you so much. American Consumer Institute. And again, the website is theamericanconsumer.org. And we appreciate you joining us. And by the way, Tirza, you're welcome anytime. Just let us know.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. No, appreciate it very much. And folks, again, these are things that I asked her that, frankly, I've done a lot of homework on. I can't find the information that I'm asking for. Some of you that go out and look, you'll see some numbers, for example, where the Sierra Club had a particular university. They did a study, and they'll tell you that there's 200 barrels of oil in every EV made versus 300 for an ICE vehicle. Keep in mind, that number is very, very deceiving. First of all, they're old. Second of all, it doesn't take into account everything else I just mentioned to her a moment ago. They're literally talking about the factory floor only, not what it takes to produce the battery, not what it takes to get all the parts to the factory floor and just-in-time delivery, and on we go. So it's a very misleading article, by the way, or a very misleading study that the Sierra Club will put out there saying that, an EV uses 100 barrels of oil initially, less than an ICE vehicle does. It's a very misleading because, by the way, it's a lie. It's not true because they're forgetting a lot of the other steps that go into making that vehicle. And at some point in time, I would love to see an accurate description of what it actually takes. I just don't think anybody wants to do that because they know it's going to be so upside down, nobody would buy an EV down the road if that's what they're looking at doing. And by the way, I'm not telling you to buy an EV or an ICE vehicle because you're trying to save the planet. It doesn't need saved. That's a whole other discussion we'll get into on Thursday, by the way. This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.